Shambhala vision is not purely a philosophy. It is actually training yourself to be a warrior. It is learning to treat yourself better so that you can help to build an enlightened society. In that process, self-respect is very important, and it is wonderful, absolutely excellent. You may not have money to buy expensive clothes, but you don't have to feel that your economic problems are driving you into the depression of the setting sun world. You can still express dignity and goodness. You may be wearing jeans and a t-shirt, but you can be a dignified person wearing a t-shirt and cut-off jeans. The problem arises when you don't have respect for yourself, and therefore for your clothes. If you go to bed in a depression and throw your clothes on the floor, that is a problem. The basic point is that when you live your life in accordance with basic goodness, then you develop natural elegance. Your life can be spacious and relaxed without having to be sloppy. You can actually let go of your depression and embarrassment about being a human being, and you can cheer up. You don't have to blame the world for your problems. You can relax and appreciate the world. Then there is a further stage of letting go, which is telling the truth. When you have doubts about yourself, or doubts about the trustworthiness of your world, then you may feel that you have to manipulate the truth in order to protect yourself. For example, when you have a job interview, you may not be entirely truthful with your potential employer. You may feel that you have to bend the truth to get the job. You think that you have to make yourself appear better than you are. From the Shambhala point of view, honesty is the best policy. But telling the truth does not mean that you have to bare your innermost secrets and expose everything that you are ashamed of. You have nothing to be ashamed of. That is the basis for telling the truth. You may not be the greatest scholar or mechanic or artist or lover in the world, but what you are is genuinely, basically, good. If you actually feel that, then you can let go of hesitation and self-consciousness and tell the truth, without exaggeration or denigration. Then you begin to understand the importance of communicating openly with others. If you tell the truth to others, then they can also be open with you, maybe not immediately, but you are giving them the opportunity to express themselves honestly as well. When you do not say what you feel, you generate confusion for yourself and confusion for others. Avoiding the truth defeats the purpose of speech as communication. Telling the truth is also connected with gentleness. A Shambhala person speaks gently. He or she doesn't bark. Gentle speech expresses your dignity, as does having good head and shoulders. It would be very strange if someone had good head and shoulders and began to bark. It would be very incongruous. Often when you talk to a person who doesn't know English, you find yourself yelling, as if you had to shout to be understood. That is exactly what should not happen. If you want to communicate with others, you don't have to shout and bang on the table in order to get them to listen. If you are telling the truth, then you can speak gently, and your words will have power. The final stage of letting go is being without deception. Deception here does not refer to deliberately misleading others. Rather, your self-deception, your own hesitation and self-doubt, may confuse other people or actually deceive them. You may ask someone to help you make a decision. Should I ask this person to marry me? Should I complain to so-and-so who was rude to me? Should I take this job? Should I go on vacation? You are deceiving others if your question is not a genuine request for help, but simply reflects your lack of self-confidence. Being without deception is actually a further extension of telling the truth. It is based on being truthful with yourself. When you have a sense of trusting in your own existence, then what you communicate to other people is genuine and trustworthy. Self-deception often arises because you are afraid of your own intelligence and afraid you won't be able to deal properly with your life. You are unable to acknowledge your own innate wisdom. Instead, you see wisdom as some monumental thing outside of yourself. That attitude has to be overcome. In order to be without deception, the only reference point you can rely on is the knowledge that basic goodness exists in you already. The certainty of that knowledge can be experienced in the practice of meditation. In meditation, you can experience a state of mind that is without second thoughts, free from fear and doubt. That unwavering state of mind is not swayed by the temporary ups and downs of thoughts and emotions. At first, you may only have a glimpse. Through the practice of meditation, you glimpse a spark or a dot of unconditional basic goodness. When you experience that dot, you may not feel totally free or totally good, but you realize that wakefulness, fundamental goodness, is there already. You can let go of hesitation, and therefore you can be without deception. There is an uplifted quality to your life, which exists effortlessly. The result of letting go is contacting that uplifted energy, which allows you to completely join together discipline and delight, so that discipline becomes both effortless and splendid. Everyone has experienced a wind of energy or power in their lives. For example, athletes feel a surge of energy when they are engaged in their sport. Or a person may experience a torrent of love or passion for another human being to whom he or she is attracted. Sometimes we feel energy is a cool breeze of delight rather than a strong wind. For example, when you are hot and perspiring, if you take a shower, you feel so delightfully cool and energized at the same time. Normally, we think that this energy comes from a definite source or has a particular cause. We associate it with the situation in which we became so energized. Athletes may become addicted to their sport because of the rush they experience. Some people become addicted to falling in love over and over again because they feel so good and alive when they are in love. The result of letting go is that you discover a bank of self-existing energy that is always available to you, beyond any circumstance. It actually comes from nowhere, but is always there. It is the energy of basic goodness. This self-existing energy is called wind horse in the Shambhala teachings. The wind principle is that the energy of basic goodness is strong and exuberant and brilliant. It can actually radiate tremendous power in your life. But at the same time, basic goodness can be ridden, which is the principle of the horse. By following the disciplines of warriorship, particularly the discipline of letting go, you can harness the wind of goodness. In some sense, the horse is never tamed. Basic goodness never becomes your personal possession. But you can invoke and provoke the uplifted energy of basic goodness in your life. You begin to see how you can create basic goodness for yourself and others on the spot, fully and ideally, not only on a philosophical level, but on a concrete, physical level. When you contact the energy of Wind Horse, you can naturally let go of worrying about your own state of mind, and you can begin to think of others. You feel a longing to share your discovery of goodness with your brothers and sisters, your mother and father, friends of all kinds who would also benefit from the message of basic goodness. So discovering Wind Horse is, first of all, acknowledging the strength of basic goodness in yourself, and then fearlessly projecting that state of mind to others. Experiencing the upliftedness of the world is a joyous situation, but it also brings sadness. It is like falling in love. When you are in love, being with your lover is both delightful and very painful. You feel both joy and sorrow. That is not a problem. In fact, it is wonderful. It is the ideal human emotion. The warrior who experiences wind horse feels the joy and sorrow of love in everything he does. He feels hot and cold, sweet and sour simultaneously. Whether things go well or things go badly, whether there is success or failure, he feels sad and delighted at once. In that way, the warrior begins to understand the meaning of unconditional confidence. The Tibetan word for confidence is ziji. Zi means shine or glitter, and ji means splendor or dignity, and sometimes also has the sense of monolithic. So ziji expresses shining out, rejoicing while remaining dignified. Sometimes confidence means that being in a choiceless state, you trust in yourself and use your savings, information, strength, good memory, and stiff upper lip, and you accelerate your aggression and tell yourself you're going to make it. That is the way of amateur warriors. In this case, confidence does not mean that you have confidence in something, but it is remaining in the state of confidence, free from competition or one-upmanship. This is an unconditional state in which you simply possess an unwavering state of mind that needs no reference point. There is no room for doubt. Even the question of doubt does not occur. This kind of confidence contains gentleness, because the notion of fear does not arise. Sturdiness, because in the state of confidence there is ever-present resourcefulness. And joy, because trusting in the heart brings a greater sense of humor. This confidence can manifest as majesty, elegance, and richness in a person's life. Discovering magic. In 20th century society, the appreciation of simplicity has almost been lost. From London to Tokyo, there are problems with trying to create pleasure and comfort out of speed. The world is mechanized to such an extent that you don't even have to think. You just push a button and a computer gives you the answer. You don't have to learn to count. You press a button and a machine counts for you. Casualness has become increasingly popular because people think in terms of efficiency rather than appreciation. Why bother to wear a tie if the purpose of wearing clothes is just to cover your body? If the reason for eating food is only to fill your stomach and provide nutrition, why bother to look for the best meat, the best butter, the best vegetables? But the reality of the world is something more than the lifestyle that the 20th century world has embraced. Pleasure has been cheapened. Joy has been reduced. Happiness has been computerized. The goal of warriorship is to reconnect to the nowness of reality, so that you can go forward without destroying simplicity, without destroying your connection to this earth. In order to rediscover nowness, you have to look back. Back to where you came from. Back to the original state. In this case, looking back is not looking back in time, going back several thousand years. It is looking back into your own mind, to before history began, before thinking began, before thought ever occurred. When you are in contact with this original ground, then you are never confused by the illusions of past and future. You are able to rest continuously in nowness. This original state of being can be likened to a primordial or cosmic mirror. By primordial, we mean unconditioned, not caused by any circumstances. Something primordial is not a reaction for or against any situation. All conditionality comes from unconditionality. Anything that is made has to come from what was unmade to begin with. If something is conditioned, it has been created or formed. In the English language, we speak of formulating ideas or plans, or we may say, how should we form our organization? Or we may talk about the formation of a cloud. In contrast to that, the unconditioned is free from being formed, free from creation. This unconditioned state is likened to a primordial mirror because, like a mirror, it is willing to reflect anything, from the gross level up to the refined level, and it still remains as it is. The basic frame of reference of the cosmic mirror is quite vast, and it is free from any bias, kill or cure, hope or fear. The way to look back and experience the state of being of the cosmic mirror is simply to relax. In this case, relaxation is quite different from the setting sun idea of flopping or taking time off, entertaining yourself with a good vacation. Relaxation here refers to relaxing the mind, letting go of the anxiety and concepts and depression that normally bind you. The way to relax or rest the mind in nowness is through the practice of meditation. In meditation, you are neither for nor against your experience. That is, you don't praise some thoughts and condemn others, but you take an unbiased approach. You let things be as they are, without judgment, and in that way, you yourself learn to be, to express your existence directly, non-conceptually. That is the ideal state of relaxation, which allows you to experience the nowness of the cosmic mirror. In fact, it is already the experience of the cosmic mirror. If you are able to relax to a cloud by looking at it, relax to a drop of rain and experience its genuineness, you can see the unconditionality of reality, which remains very simply in things as they are, very simply. When you are able to look at things without saying, "This is for me or against me, I can go along with this," or "I cannot go along with this," then you are experiencing the state of being of the cosmic mirror, the wisdom of the cosmic mirror. You may see a fly buzzing. You may see a snowflake. You may see ripples of water. You may see a black widow spider. You may see anything. But you can actually look at all those things with simple and ordinary but appreciative perception. You experience a vast realm of perceptions unfolding. There is unlimited sound, unlimited sight, unlimited taste, unlimited feeling, and so on. The realm of perception is limitless, so limitless that perception itself is primordial, unthinkable, beyond thought. There are so many perceptions that they are beyond imagination. There are a vast number of sounds. There are sounds that you have never heard. There are sights and colors that you have never seen. There are feelings that you have never experienced before. There are endless fields of perception. Perception here is not just what you perceive, but the whole act of perceiving, the interaction between consciousness, the sense organs, and the sense fields, or the objects of perception. In some religious traditions, sense perceptions are regarded as problematic because they arouse worldly desires. However, in the Shambhala tradition, which is a secular tradition rather than a religious one, sense perceptions are regarded as sacred. They are regarded as basically good. They are a natural gift, a natural ability that human beings have. They are a source of wisdom. If you don't see sights, if you don't hear sounds, if you don't taste food, you have no way to communicate with the phenomenal world at all. But because of the extraordinary vastness of perception, you have possibilities of communicating with the depth of the world of sight, the world of sound, the greater world. In other words, your sense faculties give you access to possibilities of deeper perception. Beyond ordinary perception, there is super sound, super smell, and super feeling existing in your state of being. These can be experienced only by training yourself in the depth of meditation practice, which clarifies any confusion or cloudiness and brings out the precision, sharpness, and wisdom of perception. the nowness of your world. In meditation, you experience the precision of breath going in and out. You feel your breath. It is so good. You breathe out, breath dissolves. It is so sharp and good. It is so extraordinary that ordinary preoccupations become superfluous. So meditation practice brings out the supernatural, if I may use that word. You do not see ghosts or become telepathic, but your perceptions become supernatural, simply supernatural. Normally, we limit the meaning of perceptions. Food reminds us of eating. Dirt reminds us to clean the house. Snow reminds us that we have to clean off the car to get to work. A face reminds us of our love or hate. In other words, we fit what we see into a comfortable or familiar scheme. We shut any vastness or possibilities of deeper perception out of our hearts by fixating on our own interpretation of phenomena. But it is possible to go beyond personal interpretation, to let vastness into our hearts through the medium of perception. We always have a choice. We can limit our perception so that we close off vastness, or we can allow vastness to touch us. When we draw down the power and depth of vastness into a single perception, then we are discovering and invoking magic. By magic, we do not mean unnatural power over the phenomenal world, but rather the discovery of innate or primordial wisdom in the world as it is. The wisdom we are discovering is wisdom without beginning, something naturally wise, the wisdom of the cosmic mirror. In Tibetan, this magical quality of existence or natural wisdom is called Drala. Dra means enemy or opponent, and La means above. So Drala literally means above the enemy, beyond the enemy. Drala is the unconditioned wisdom and power of the world that are beyond any dualism. Therefore, Drala is above any enemy or conflict. It is wisdom beyond aggression. It is the self-existing wisdom and power of the cosmic mirror that are reflected both in us and in our world of perception. One of the key points in discovering Drala principle is realizing that your own wisdom as a human being is not separate from the power of things as they are. They are both reflections of the unconditioned wisdom of the cosmic mirror. Therefore, there is no fundamental separation or duality between you and your world. When you can experience those two things together as one, then you have access to tremendous vision and power in the world. You find that they are inherently connected to your own vision, your own being. That is discovering magic. We are not talking here about an intellectual revelation. We are speaking of actual experience. We are talking about how we actually perceive reality. The discovery of Drala may come as an extraordinary smell, a fantastic sound, a vivid color, an unusual taste. Any perception can connect us to reality properly and fully. What we see doesn't have to be pretty particularly. We can appreciate anything that exists. There is some principle of magic in everything, some living quality, something living, something real is taking place in everything. When we see things as they are, they make sense to us. The way leaves move when they are blown by the wind. The way rocks get wet when there are snowflakes sitting on them. We see how things display their harmony and their chaos at the same time. So we are never limited by beauty alone, but we appreciate all sides of reality properly. Many stories and poems written for children describe the experience of invoking the magic of a simple perception. One example is Waiting at the Window from Now We Are Six by A.A. Milne. It is a poem about spending several hours on a rainy day looking out of the window, watching drops of water come down and make patterns on the glass. Reading this poem, you see the window, the rainy day, and the child with his face pressed to the glass, watching the raindrops, and you feel the child's sense of delight and wonder. The poems of Robert Louis Stevenson in A Child's Garden of Verses have a similar quality of using very ordinary experiences to communicate the depth of perception. The poems My Shadow, My Kingdom, and Armies in the Fire exemplify this. The fundamental vastness of the world cannot be expressed directly in words, but in children's literature, very often it is possible to express that vastness in simplicity. The Little Prince by Antoine de Saint-Exupéry is another wonderful example of literature that evokes the sense of ordinary or elemental magic. At one point in this story, the little prince meets a fox. The prince is very lonely and wants the fox to play with him, but the fox says that he cannot play unless he is tamed. The little prince asks the meaning of the word tame. The fox explains that it means to establish ties in such a way that the fox will become unique to the little prince, and the prince unique to the fox. Later, after the fox has been tamed, and the little prince must leave him, the fox also tells the prince what he calls my secret, a very simple secret, which is, it is only with the heart that one can see rightly. What is essential is invisible to the eye. Saint-Exupéry has a different vocabulary here for describing the discovery of magic or drala, but the experience is basically the same. Discovering drala is indeed to establish ties to your world so that each perception becomes unique. It is to see with the heart so that what is invisible to the eye becomes visible as the living magic of reality. There may be thousands or billions of perceptions, but they are still one. If you see one candle, you know exactly what all the candles in the whole world look like. They are all made out of fire, flame. Seeing one drop of water can be seeing all water. Drala could almost be called an entity. It is not quite on the level of a god or gods, but it is an individual strength that does exist. Therefore, we not only speak of drala principle, but we speak of meeting the dralas. The dralas are the elements of reality, water of water, fire of fire, earth of earth, anything that connects you with the elemental quality of reality, anything that reminds you of the depth of perception. There are dralas in the rocks, or the trees, or the mountains, or a snowflake, or a clod of dirt. Whatever is there, whatever you come across in your life, those are the dralas of reality. When you make that connection with the elemental quality of the world, you are meeting dralas on the spot. That is the basic existence of which all human beings are capable. We always have possibilities of discovering magic. Whether it is medieval times or the 20th century, the possibility of magic is always there.